With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. Announcing his run for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination, former Texas Governor Rick Perry telling supporters outside Dallas to hold on. He says better days are on the way.
The truth is, we're at the end of an era of failed leadership.
It's Perry's second White House run. A gaffe during a GOP presidential debate derailed his last campaign 4 years ago. Democratic presidential contender Hillary Clinton is on the stump today in Texas. She's pushing for an expansion of early voting. If the president was counting on help from House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi to rally Democrats behind his trade agenda, he'd better think again.
It's not my responsibility.
The California Democrat says this one's up to Republican leader John Boehner.
It's where the support exists in his caucus. He has the majority.
Boehner will likely need some Democrat votes, and he knows that won't come easy.
I know it's not an easy issue for them politically. A big labor and liberal special interests have been ratcheting up their threats.
Legislation, which has little support among Democrats and many conservatives, would give the president increased powers to negotiate trade deals with Congress only allowed an up or down vote.
That's SRN's Wally Hines on Capitol Hill. Also at SRNNews.com, an Italian tourist on his honeymoon has been identified as one of three victims of a deadly crash involving a tour bus and a tractor trailer in the Pennsylvania Poconos yesterday. The bus driver and another passenger, also from Italy, were also killed. Is a serial killer on the loose in northern Colorado? Investigators looking into it after a bicyclist was recently gunned down and a driver was wounded nearby. Now authorities want to see if another fatal shooting overnight is related. On Wall Street, ahead of the close, Dow down 182. This is SRN News.
Now that Rite Aid has joined the Plenty program, Wellness Plus is even more rewarding because now you get a second easy way to save. That's right. On top of the amazing values you enjoy with Wellness Plus points, your new card gives you Plenty points, which can be earned in one place and used for savings in another. Earn and use your Plenty points at Rite Aid, Macy's, AT&T, Exxon, and Mobil, and other participating partners. It's even more of the value you love. It's Wellness Plus with Plenty. Get your new card at Rite Aid today. With us, it's personal.
Professional chefs at fine restaurants know that the secret to juicier and more succulent food is intense heat. The intense heat sears the food and locks in flavor. Solaire Infrared Grills gives you that high heat. Now you can produce the same delicious food served at high-end restaurants right in your own backyard. No matter what meat, veggies, or fruit you're grilling, it's going to taste great. Learn more about American-made Solaire Infrared Grills at BestHotGrill.com. BestHotGrill.com.
Chaos in Iraq. The UN says it's an emergency that requires a lot of cash to address.
The UN says the humanitarian crisis in Iraq is one of the most rapidly unfolding in the world, and that it's likely to get worse. But it's warning that it's running out of money to help. Millions of traumatized Iraqis are now living in camps in searing heat, or crammed into schools, mosques, and other people's homes. Already, food rations have been reduced, and UN officials say they'll have to cut or shut half of their aid operations unless the international community comes forward with funds. Without that help, it's warned of catastrophic consequences.
The BBC's Caroline Hawley, the UN appealing for almost $500 million in aid. A Turkish government official says more than 3,300 Syrians have crossed into Turkey in the past few days. They're fleeing fighting between Islamic State terrorists and Kurdish forces in northern Syria. This is SRN News. Still talking, the White House and the government of Qatar discussing the status of five Taliban leaders who were once held by the U.S. at Guantanamo.
The Obama administration released the five Taliban leaders last year from the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, in exchange for Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. But their one-year travel ban has expired. White House spokesman Josh Earnest says the U.S. has security concerns about the five and that the travel restrictions remain in place while negotiations continue.
SRN News White House correspondent Greg Clugston. The International Monetary Fund downgrading its outlook for the U.S. economy this year. The IMF says Federal Reserve should wait until the first half of next year to start raising short-term interest rates. The IMF predicts that the American economy will grow about 2.4% this year. That's down from its April forecast of 3.1%. More details at srnnews.com.
Whoa! failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
Not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hey, and welcome. This is Real Talk, and I'm your host, Audrey Russo, and this is where the best in the arts and culture get it right. Besides me singing on the intro there, that was Toby Mackwell, Unstoppable from his Ionic CD. And we have a super lineup for you, and actually, this is a pretty exciting show because we now have joined, the show has been picked up by Red State Talk Radio and Talk 92.1 out of Valdosta, Georgia. So it's pretty exciting. For this show, author and terrorism analyst Wayne Simmons will be here, plus former Navy SEAL and author Carl Higbee will be back with us. And more, of course, on our Second Amendment with Johnny Kakalaki on the smoking gun. But first, Mr. P?
Yeah.
Yeah. What am I going to say? Don't practice political correctness. Stop practicing it, for goodness sakes. It's self-imposing censorship. No one, at least at this point, you know, I mean, I don't know if this administration had more time, maybe that would change, but no one at this point can force you to censor your own language. It's your constitutionally protected speech. George MacDonald Fraser, the author, once said, the two pillars of political correctness are, one, willful ignorance, and two, a steadfast refusal to face the truth. And, of course, our founders, the prescient men that they were, knew this. George Washington once said, our founders, if the freedom of speech is taken away, then dumb and silent, we may be led like sheep to the slaughter. And as my friend and comedian Brad Stein has said over and over and over again, how do you stop political correctness, Mr. P?
You simply stop doing it.
Yeah, just stop
it. Cut it out.
Knock it off.
Come on.
We could say it like a knock it off. Stop doing it. And I want to encourage the listeners to please keep our troops in your prayers, because remember, it's not their fault that the Marxists, you know, they didn't, when he got in office, many of them were already in there. It's not their fault. An Islamist, a Marxist Islamist is their commander. A lot is going on due to the changes made by this president, all negative, okay, that are destroying our military. Also remember our military families and our disabled veterans, because their commander, and he's not my commander, their commander and the VA refuse to remember them. Am I correct, Mr. P, as a veteran?
Yes, you are correct, and we've talked about this so many times, and he ain't my commander-in-chief either, so
yeah.
I'm on board with you. This man has a great disdain and hatred for our troops, and he demonstrates it every single day and every time he opens his pie hole.
Yes, we'll see. We have to talk about some of these things before. Wayne will be coming up first, and then Carl, and then the smoking gun.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. Smoking. Okay. Common Core. Okay, don't get nauseous. All right. We all know about the Common Core standards, but there's some stuff we may not be aware of. We're going to talk a little bit with both, I'm going to talk later with Wayne and with Carl about Qatar, or guitar, okay?
I like gutter. Gutter sounds good to me.
Gutter. I'm sure most didn't realize that they're funding part of Common Core. What?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And guess why, Mr. P?
Oh, I think I know why.
Yeah.
I think I know why.
Well, it's certainly not the Common Core math standard, okay, has to do with re-educating us mm-hmm. on Muslims' role in our nation's history. Okay, I'm going to play something for the listeners, but then I want you to share, Mr. P, from history about their role in our history. So here's a clip of a Muslim student. A college student who's taking the lead to make sure your kids are carefully re-educated and brainwashed. Of course, she's not going to say that. Informed is what she says, but what she's suggesting is going to make your head explode. So can we get that going, Mr. P?
Absolutely.
My name is Sada Abdullah. I'm a senior, early childhood education major with a minor in ESOL. Our research focuses on Muslim Americans in the history of America, and we focus on how they contributed to our history and also Muslims from all around the world. When I was growing up in an American public school, in elementary and middle school, we got nothing about Islam. We learned absolutely nothing. The solution we're proposing is that we educate our teachers first. We can't educate our students just through a textbook because it is too easy to misinterpret what we're reading. So we suggest that there are courses for our elementary school teachers to take where they are given the information, just history, teaching it from a social studies perspective to our children, so our children are more well-informed citizens of this country.
What the? All right. So...
Yeah.
Let's look at that. From her accent, I can tell she's not from the Middle East. She's a convert. Okay?
That is correct.
Yeah. And so now, think about how disturbed she is that students weren't taught about Islam, a religion, in school. Okay, we know it's not a religion. Okay, just let me get that straight. It's an ideology. It's a political totalitarian ideology cloaked in religion, but they like to pretend it's a religion. Okay, so let's take it from that angle. She's disturbed about that. Well, hey, what happened to separation of, okay, in this case, mosques, of a mosque and state?
Well, the entire thing is a joke, but again, listen, thanks to Barack Obama, and even, I hate to say this, former President Bush, they both made the following statement, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, that Islam played a significant role in the founding of America. That is BS on stilts, my friend. BS.
Yeah. What did our founders know about? Okay, let's talk about it in our history, okay? Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us about the Barbary pirates, okay? And it's not okay? It's not that kind of pirate.
No, not that type of pirate. These were North African Islamic countries that were attacking our merchant ships in the early 1800s. And when Thomas Jefferson questioned as to why our ships were being attacked, the response he got from those Muslim countries was the following. We attack you because it is mandated in the Quran. We are Muslim, you are Christian, and you must be eradicated.
Bingo was his name-o. Yeah.
And that was the first conflict our nascent country was involved in. Yeah. And again, it was because those Muslim countries felt that we did not have the right to exist.
Of course, and nothing has changed. It's still the same. It's still the same doctrine. We hear it coming out of the Islamic State, and they're very involved supporters. I mean, we had one, as a matter of fact, that was killed, that was wielding a knife. Where was that? Just
that was up in Boston.
In Boston, okay.
Yes, it was.
Of all places, right? In Boston. And this monster was planning to behead our friend Pamela Geller. That's who his intention was.
Yeah.
But he went to stab a police officer, and oopsie, bang bang.
Yeah, and
so Hassan no chop, huh?
Hassan no chop, and thank God he's dead. But let's also remember, and you had talked about this just a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah.
The main issue here with Common Core is forget about all the ridiculous things that
the idiotic
math and methodologies. Yeah. That's all. That's
but this
all
is ridiculous. This is completely venal.
Right.
Yeah.
That's bad enough. The bottom line is, and the main thrust of Common Core is to indoctrinate teachers and students into the ways of Islam.
Yes. Yeah. And it's amazing. It's stunning to me. And, of course, it just shows you, because this is a totalitarian system. And it gets its foot in the door through this pretense of religion. It's not a religion, period. It's not a religion. It is an ideology. It's a totality. It completely, it engulfs like a monster in the entire system. And that is... this is what it is. This is what Islam is. And for the left, who is just the entire NEA, National Education Association Union, is left, completely left, all right? And they go ballistic if a child even, if their freedom of religion has a Bible in the class, and they won't allow the teachers to do that. But yet, you want our kids to be indoctrinated with Islam? Mm-hmm. What the? I don't want to, I'm just going to, steam's coming out my ears.
Yeah, but you see, here's what they have done with Islam. They have equated it to a race.
Yeah.
And therefore,
yeah.
if you stand well, against Islam, you are not only accused of Islamophobia,
right.
but you are called a racist
right.
and a bigot.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that is just what again, and we've talked about this many times. What race is Islam?
There is no race.
That is correct.
That's
it is
right.
an ideology, not a race.
That's right. Iranians are not. They're as cracker as I am. Okay, so are the Albanians. Probably some of them are more cracker than I am, and they're Muslim.
And that's correct. They are Muslim.
Yeah.
That is
so
100% correct.
They come in every...
Oh, yeah.
yeah. It's, and to try to pull... Well, only idiots, only morons are going to react to it when they say racist. Because then that shows their complete and utter ignorance about this ideology. It's in every culture, in every country around the world. Anywhere you see, some sort of infestation, because they're not the cleanest people in the world. You'll find them.
You'll find them. And I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. To all the liberals out there, if you really want to know what Islam is all about, look no further than Saudi Arabia. Look no further than their establishment when it comes to the rights of women, children, so on and so forth. It is a tyranny. It is a despotic country, and it's all based on Sharia law. I can tell you one thing. I don't think there's one single liberal, if you were honest, that would say, I would want to raise my daughter in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, my God.
No further than Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, just last month, a video went viral of a woman being dragged out of her house and her head chopped off in the middle of a crosswalk in broad daylight, all because her husband accused her of violating Sharia law. Come on, get over it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But let's hop on over to Sweden. Okay, Sweden, the country that the regular listeners know, my friend Mona Walter, who was a former Somali Muslim, who she, no longer now she's a Christian, and she lives in Sweden, of course, under government protection, because once she left Islam, guess what they were doing? Yeah, that's right, death threats. And now you have this resistance movement, and this is very encouraging to see this, but this resistance movement, there's something, there's a rumbling, in the people, and they're doing something. And so this group went outside of one that was pushing multiculturalism on the people, a former political leader there, and they went outside with their cars and the speakers, and they blasted is, you know, the Muslim, the Adhan, the Muslim call to prayer, to let them get a taste of what is coming because of what he did. This is multiculturalism. And, of course, you know, the police put a stop to it, you know, over there. But yeah, this is very encouraging to see this, to see that the people are getting fed up. But most of them cower in fear there, as Mona has shared, because of the race card. They use it. It works well there, and you know, I thought the Swedish people are smarter than that. But apparently, it works very well when they use the race card against them when they talk. If they won't say anything about Islam, period. Now let's hop over, you know, across the pond, closer to us, Rotherham. Okay, now many may know, and a guest that's been on the show for, you know, in the past several times, Gavin Bobby of the Law and Freedom Foundation. They did a white paper, a report on the grooming gangs, which are, you know, sex, you know, rape, prostitution rings. They're all Muslim, okay? And they pick on the white girls, especially Christian girls. And this was going on for years, and thousands were raped. And they were being reported, and the police were doing nothing. Of course, they, you know, and these are Muslim pedophile rape gangs, is what they are. And so, you want to talk about that a little?
Yeah, we know what happened in Rotherham. There were about 1,400 to 2,000 girls that were raped over a period of 17 years by Islamic rape gangs. And here's the thing. People started to come out and protest last week against what happened in Rotherham. I'm talking about the residents of Rotherham, against the police because the police did nothing about it, against the Muslims who were raping these young girls. And guess what the Rotherham police did? They closed down the demonstrations because they said, hey, these demonstrations are costing us too much money.
Now, think about that.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I'm telling you, the people there should be... I mean, they should be firing people. They should throw these people in jail. I mean, I'm talking about the lawmakers are telling the police to stop them, because any lawmaker that would say, oh, this is costing too much, one of those girls' lives was worth every penny.
Oh, without a
every
doubt.
Penny.
Without a doubt. And Liberty Great Britain had reported, I think it was last year,
that
one dad tried to stop what was happening to his daughter.
Yeah.
All right? And he was arrested by the police.
Yeah.
For trying to save his own daughter, by the Rotherham police, he was arrested.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
This is an incredible disgrace. I'm going to, as a matter of fact, from George Igler from across the pond, my friend there, he is the head of the Discourse Institute, and I'm going to discuss this with him in a couple of weeks. I'm going to have him back on to discuss this. But to me, it's incredibly egregious for anyone to say that. This is costing too much. One of those lives, because those little girls that were raped, they are now the walking dead. That's what they are.
That's correct.
You know, because they weren't helping them. They were in denial, and certainly those girls, if they weren't preventing it from happening, they're certainly not going to help them as far as needing the counseling that they need.
That is correct. And also, let us mention right now, let's make it very clear, the reason why the police never did anything about it is because they did not want to be accused of racism.
There it is. See?
Can you imagine the cowards?
I want to make sure you know that when I'm going to slam somebody, it's going to be for good reason. I don't believe the majority of the Swedes are ignorant. But when you allow fear to rule your life, you're making serious mistakes. Because especially when it comes to Muslims, because their whole mindset, especially over there, they don't look at compromise. They don't look at mercy. Nothing like that. Do they look as something good? They look at it as something to be conquered. It's a weakness to them. That's weakness. So when you walk around and cowering in fear of saying anything, my gosh, you have given your culture away. That's what you have done. You clearly have given your culture away. As a matter of fact, I just my last piece, I had quoted you know, she's no longer with us, but she was one of the she was brilliant. Oriana Fallaci. She said, "The moment you give up your principles and your values, you are dead. Your culture is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Your civilization is dead. Period." And I couldn't agree more.
She was spot on. She was brilliant. And I just want to challenge. I love what they did in Sweden.
Yeah.
And I want to challenge everyone in Sweden, everyone in Scandinavia, channel your inner Viking. And go for it. Fight back. Because if you don't, you're going to lose your countries.
Yeah.
Channel that inner Viking.
Well, many say that you know, Sweden is gone. But seeing this, is very encouraging.
Very promising.
You know, whoever they are, put them in. You know, put these guys in office who did this.
Exactly. Exactly. Because they show
leadership.
Cojones.
Yeah, they show leadership, and you know, you need to do that because these guys in that culture, which is, you know, been pretty much written off. If they're doing this, somebody needs to. Hire them, you know, vote them in, because this is, you know, you cannot, they have all but given their entire culture away, and it is beyond heartbreaking to see this. I don't even know what to say.
So think about it in Denmark. Women, blondes are dyeing their hair dark. They're becoming brunettes in order not to be harassed and raped by Muslim men.
Yeah.
That is disgraceful.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to jump over here to Bangladesh. Of course, we know, you know, you've had, as a matter of fact, I think, wasn't it, if there was a Bangladeshi blogger, was one of the ones that was murdered?
Yes.
You know, because they left Islam, and they were being critical of Islam, rightfully so. It was really funny, was on the Bare Naked Islam, my friend Bonnie writes, "Give me a Coke and no ISIS, please." Okay. The IT chief at Bangladesh Coca-Cola is one of two men who have been arrested as an Islamic State terrorist suspect. And she wrote, maybe the CEO of Coca-Cola America, Muhtar Kent, should be investigated as well, because he is a Muslim, after all. Al Arabiya reported this, and there's Saqib is one of the men, and Aminul Islam is, you know, they're so inventive and creative with their names. The IT manager at subsidiary of a Coca-Cola company was one of two men arrested in Bangladesh on suspicion of planning to fight for the Islamic State. I don't even know where do you go with this? Yeah, and you know, someone is in a professional position, you have to understand the ideology. These are all temporal things, careers and positions, and howdy neighbor. You know, the kid plays in some sport with your kid, and next thing you know, they're flying a plane into a building. This is because that takes over. That takes precedence. Mm-hmm. Remember, it has to come first. It always has to come first.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's the bottom line.
Well, like, think about this. Two high-ranking officials from Coca-Cola wanting to go and fight for ISIS.
Yeah.
Think about that, people. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Stunning.
I don't even know where to go with that. But what it's really not confusing when you start to realize what the ideology is about, how all encompassing it is, and how it must take precedence. And I actually later on with Carl, I'm going to play a clip and see, you know, what he thinks. You know, in Minnesota, of course, that's one of the places that Obama plopped. He gave them a refugee status, and he plopped them into Minnesota, these Somali Muslims. And they don't want to be American. They're living off our tax dollars. And, I mean, this is a situation that we find ourselves in. I'll talk about it with him then. So, thanks, Mr. P. We're going to take a quick break right here. But don't go anywhere, because we have the great Wayne Simmons back with us, and we're going to talk a lot about a lot of stuff going on here, especially veterans. So stay right there. We'll be right back.
Israel's a small country, but when you're in charge of the emergency medical response for its 7.8 million people, it's a big job. Nowhere in Israel is Magen David Adom's work more critical than in Yehudan Shomron, where Israeli homes are often more than a half hour from the nearest hospital. That's why we have emergency medical stations in 16 locations throughout Yesha. MDA is there 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, with trained paramedics, state-of-the-art equipment, ready to save lives in cities like Ariel, Beitar Elite, and Ma'ale Adonim. MDA is there in towns and settlements like Givat Zev, Efrat, Kiryat Arba, Karne Shomron, and Alfe Menashe. MDA is there in Bet Ariyeh, Ofra, Talmon, and Tekua, Shaked, and Sheveh Shomron, and in regional councils like Megillot and Bikat HaYarden. At Magen David Adom, this is the only green line that matters to us, because when you're living a long way from the nearest hospital, how quickly MDA can get there can make all the difference in the world. And above all, the one thing we value most is life.
Hi, I'm Matt Barber. Your nation is under attack from forces desperate to destroy America's moral foundation. Don't be defeated by the leftist onslaught. Become empowered and fight back. BarbWire.com is a motley mix of breaking news, intelligent cultural analysis, political pontification, and cutting-edge opinion, all fueled by the word of life. If you're comfortable under deception, prepare to be made uncomfortable. We're cutting free the totalitarian left's barbed wire. Join the fight now to reclaim America at BarbWire.com. That's BarbWire.com.
Hi, this is Andy McCarthy, author of Faithless Execution, and you're listening to my friend Audrey Russo on Real Talk.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Tyrannical ideologies, cowardice, and ineptitude in leadership, the dissing of our veterans. It looks like the enemies within are winning. Our great nation is based upon Judeo-Christian principles, a system far better than any other on planet Earth. With all the damage done and being attempted by this administration, is it too late for we the people to act? Well, we're going to talk about that and much more with my next guest. He's a former CIA agent, former Navy veteran, an astute terrorism analyst, and a talented author. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Wayne Simmons. Welcome back, Wayne.
Thank you, Audrey. It's always a pleasure.
It's always great to have you back with us, and there's always so much to talk about with this administration. and it's, I guess we could say it's helper monkeys on our side, I guess, so I'm really being cruel right off the bat, okay?
As you should.
That's right. Somebody must,
set the tone, Audrey. Okay. It's your show.
Right. Set the tone right away. She's being cruel. Anyway, I wanted to start out talking about the Taliban Five. Qatar, Qatar, Muslims say Qatar. Well, they, of course, for those who are not aware, they have been funding the Islamic State. They have agreed to extend the travel ban on the Taliban Five. Now, Wayne, is Qatar a trustworthy partner in this? And how can we verify this? Or even, can we even verify that they have not left the country already?
Yeah, all great questions. And here, Qatar or Qatar or Qatar, of all of the Middle Eastern countries, I think this one is one of the most complex. And the reason it's complex, in my opinion, is because that they are unlike virtually any other country. In fact, they are unlike any other country. They've been ruled for generations by one family, and they have one of the highest per capita incomes in the world. They have a government that is really not a representative government. It is the family that rules the people. And because they have such incredible resources for the gas and oil, it makes them very, very nervous as to who would come in and take them over. So the Al-Thani family undoubtedly has this very, very, I don't want to say tenuous, but they have a very strong relationship with the United States because they know that the United States can protect them. So in that regard, we have a lot of leverage with the Al-Thani family, who is, I'm going to say, eight generations they've been ruling it, if I recall correctly. And the government, of course, is a unique kind of government where they have a constitution, but Sharia law. They also have Sharia law, but they also have civil law. So some crimes are governed under civil law, normal civil law, and serious crimes like murder and rape and adultery are Sharia law. So are they trustworthy? I think in this case, yes, but that's very, very shaky in my opinion, because I don't think we have any friends in the Middle East with the exception of Israel.
Right.
The rest of them, it is a relationship of convenience.
Yeah, I couldn't concur more about that. The only friend we have, true friend, is Israel in the Middle East. ISIS is gaining recruits from the West, which is still stunning to me. What is it, Wayne, they are offering to, you know, especially young people, young men, young women are coming too as well. What are they offering them to gain such influence?
Well, lots of things. Look, you and I both know, unfortunately, we're older now. And I say unfortunately because we are older. I'd like to stay young, you know, forever. But the wisdom that we have gained, the young people don't have. And you and I both know that when you're in college, you think you know everything and you're going to change the world. You're idealistic. Oftentimes, in many cases, that's exactly what's happening now. Sharia seems like a great idea to some young kids. The idea of Islam sounds like a great idea. What's happening that I think, quite frankly, if it continues and if it plays out, is a brilliant move, unfortunately, for ISIS or the IS. And what they're doing is they are trying to build an infrastructure of education, business, all of these things that they believe they can start offering to the young people and bring the brilliant minds, the trained minds, the educated minds back into the fold. And
wow,
that's what they're doing. Yeah. It's a very, very, it's like a Venus flytrap. They really are. And they're very, this is really, this is one of the, this is an incredibly brilliant, very well thought out move. If they're allowed to get away with it, and if they're successful with it, it could be pretty tough.
Yeah, you
know, on us.
Well, sure, on the innocent. You know, right now, of course, they're targeting Christians most of all. It sounds like we're talking about the left because they focus on. They know that there's passion in the young, there's curiosity, but not a whole lot of wisdom, and certainly not. They haven't lived very long, so they have no world experience. It's so they know exactly what they're doing. It's really
well. That's right, and they're using social media, as you know, Audrey. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, they're the Islamic State. They're promising them now, you know, that they're going to build medical centers and weapons factories, oil companies, schools. They're going to give them this utopia, build this utopia for them, and promise them this great life under a law that most of these kids have absolutely, young people, and even in some of the adult, the 20s and 30s, really have no idea of what Sharia is. They really don't. They've been raised in the West, so they're completely naive about what it really means. So they lure them in with that. If this works, again, big if, but if it does, it's a great recruiting tool, and it's a brilliant idea to try to recruit from the West. Because think about it, Audrey. Right now, they're very successful in recruiting from the West for nothing other than to join the army and go fight. So if they can recruit successfully, promising them nothing, imagine what they can do, perhaps promising them lots of goodies at the end of the rainbow.
Sure. It's a pretty frightening prospect, because they are being successful to a certain degree, being able to woo young people from the West, and I almost said it is brilliant marketing. I have to say that, and I'd almost have to wonder if they are getting. I'm not saying they are. I'm not a conspiratorialist, but they're at least getting their ideas from Madison Avenue here. I wonder if that's who they're studying to in order to woo them. Or maybe even studying our the film industry here. They're doing something.
I'm sure that they're studying lots of different methods and lots of different successful programs that have taken place in the past. But I think that the most important thing to remember is that everyone, what appeals to everyone, regardless of what it is,
mm-hmm.
all of us, we want to be part of something successful. And if that organization that we look like, a Google, like a Microsoft, like an Apple, if we have an opportunity to be part of something like that, something successful, that's exciting. That's a future. We can see it. And all they're doing is transforming an Islamic state, a caliphate, as they build their caliphate, into these promises. And whether or not they can fulfill these, or whether they even intend to fulfill these promises, is of no concern to them. They make the promises. They're young people. They're easily coerced. They are looking for something, which is always the case.
Sure.
And this happens to show up.
Yeah, and sadly, a lot of them meet with a violent end. We've seen some tragedies already. We'll see what happens here.
Yeah.
It's not pretty.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. It's just not pretty. I wanted to jump for a second here to which really does have something to do with what's going on when it comes, not just in particular with ISIS or the Islamic State, but the overall attitude toward, the kuffar, the infidels. The Vatican has now done something incredibly stupid, in my opinion, and dangerous. They recognized, it wasn't their business to do this, but the Pope recognized a Palestinian state. Now, of course, putting aside the fact that there is no such thing as Palestine or a Palestinian, the Catholic Church has a hideous history with the Jewish people. Now, Pope John Paul II made great strides in attempting to heal those wounds. Now, this Pope takes this PC line. How destructive is this, Wayne?
Well, I think it's very destructive. I think worldwide, let's back up. First of all, I think all of us would have to agree and recognize that the Catholic Church has been struggling worldwide, not just in the United States, worldwide. And by struggling, I mean they have just been getting hit with one issue after another as they stray from all of the child molestation that they are still dealing with today.
Right.
to the political positions that they seem to think that they should. I, for one, do not believe that the Catholic Church should be taking a political position on anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my personal opinion, other
mm-hmm.
than a
mm-hmm.
position that is a religious position, such as abortion.
Mm-hmm.
But when they stray over to, or any religious organization, if it were the Baptists, it would be the same thing. But they don't have the interest, number one, nor do they have the pull and the power that the Vatican has
right.
to influence people who aren't paying attention to the Middle East. So when he condones or when he sanctions a Palestinian state, those that are not really educated about it, if they do happen to hear it, it's going to be okay because the Pope said so. So I think it's a very, very it's a dangerous time. I can't for the life of me understand what the Catholic Church thinks they're doing by straying over into this the very, very deep and shark infested waters of politics again.
Yeah.
But this time it is very, very the repercussions are can be long and very, very hazardous.
Sure. And sadly, with this proclamation by recognizing a Palestinian state, this Pope has undone the arduous work that Pope John Paul II did to try to extend an olive leaf to the Jewish people and Israel. So that's tragic in that sense. He should never.
Well, that's exactly right. And remember, it's big bad Israel right in the middle of every Islamic and Arab state in the Middle East, and constantly taking a hit. European Union. Many of those in the European Union are siding with Palestine and against Israel. And so now to have the Vatican, to more importantly have the Pope take this official position is, it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate and quite frankly very dangerous.
Very much so. I agree. I'll jump for a second here so we have a few more minutes. Many listeners, not all, are aware of CNN's Brooke Baldwin's recently smearing our veterans. She then, only because there was a tremendous backlash against CNN because of her comments, did she extend an apology, not on air, where she smeared our veterans, but in social media, which really was meaningless. You know, Wayne, this is very typical. Today we have few Americans really either know someone in the military or have family members in the military. And the liberal press knows this, and they also know the power they possess to disseminate lies. Now, an apology will not erase the damage done in this egregious statement, in which the way she targeted it, to me it was disgusting, what she said about our veterans. the way she was painting them. Prefacing it with, "I love our veterans," is a lie when you follow it with an accusation, as she did. That's endemic to the left, and they preface their rhetoric for plausible deniability with a lie. Then they say, see, I say lie. Most people don't want to say that. It's a lie. And they say what they really think, and only offer a so-called apology when it hits them in their greenback god. So, Wayne, perhaps the media needs a little taste of their own medicine, and maybe they should be coerced to attend sensitivity classes on how not to be a horse's patoot.
I think your idea that they need sensitivity classes is a wonderful one. I think it's going to bring peace and harmony, and we can all stand around and sing Kumbaya. The sad reality is, Audrey, is that what this woman, who, quite frankly, I must tell you, I had never heard of her until she made this horrible statement, this disgusting statement. But she is not unlike Carol Costello. Carol Costello and others, too many to even remember, all on the left, make a habit, make a living out of berating our military, our leaders who are doing the right thing, and most importantly, our veterans. It makes me sick. And the worst part of it is they are rewarded. They are not castigated. They are not punished. They're rewarded.
Yeah.
So they're allowed to go on and do the Dan Rather lie, and do the Brian Williams two-step. It's really, really indicative of the left. None of us are surprised by it. It goes on day in and day out. We hear only about things that are so repulsive, as the comment she made about our veterans, and they don't make it. They don't apologize. They don't need to apologize.
No,
they don't need to apologize, and it's sickening.
Yeah. Because this, I say, don't apologize, because that's the way you feel. That's what you think, and America should know it. When you apologize, what are you apologizing for? That was, I saw the way she spoke in the clip on CNN. It was well thought out, because it was coming from her point of view, her frame of reference. And talking about veterans, Wayne, thank you for posting a story from Stripes about a wounded veteran and the suicide hotline. Just for the listeners, very quickly, this is really important. His name is Ryan Broderick, and he was traumatized by what he experienced during three combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. Since January, he's been in jail. Now, I'll explain what happened. He's being prosecuted for comments he let fly during a call to speak with a counselor at the Veterans Affairs Suicide Crisis Hotline. I hope everyone's listening to that, okay? He was frustrated and sleep-deprived. He was trying to get help, is what he was doing. He and his state that he was in, he didn't get the help was needed for his PTSD, and he said if he didn't get the help he needed, that he was going to bring a gun to VA hospital in Fort Bragg and start shooting. Okay. A little more than a day later, a dozen or so agents swarmed around him in the parking lot of his son's daycare center. Okay. You know, the lack of assistance for our returning veterans, and the lack of mercy and understanding for our wounded veterans here is beyond disturbing, Wayne. The left in the media and government have more concern, it seems, and more understanding for a criminal than for a veteran. Why is a veteran assumed a criminal and the true miscreant treated with compassion? Am I seeing this wrong, or it seems to me that
no. I think you're spot on. You're spot on, Audrey, and you're absolutely right. It is reprehensible that there is such compassion for a woman who drowns her children, who drives her car into the river and drowns them. Oh, there must be a reason. Let's get her some help and take care of her. The guy who you know, goes into the to the mall and kills people where there must be a reason. Let's check it out. When our veterans are coming back, they're committing suicide at the highest rate ever. It is an alarming rate. And sadly, this is the proverbial double-edged sword. These young people, these men and women, men primarily, need help. Not all of them the same severity of PTSD, but they all need help. And yet they can't get the help at the VA because the VA is doing nothing but plying them with drugs. So those that did not have PTSD that was yet redlining, all of a sudden are reacting to the drugs, and now they have redline PTSD. Wow. So they're not getting the help that they need in any manner, way, shape, or form from the VA. Because the VA right now, their only response to PTSD is drug them up and get them home. And so for this young man to reach out and be so desperate that he thinks he's going to kill himself, he knows he's going to kill himself, and no right. one will help him, yeah. that he has to make a threatening remark, and then right. to be treated like this. When they punch a button, they've got the whole record on this kid. They know who he is. Do they need to send a zillion guys into? I don't know. I don't think so. But they sure don't need to be held. But have him in jail. He doesn't need to be held in jail if they know for a fact that it's PTSD that he's suffering from.
Exactly. And then to prosecute him, to make that decision to prosecute him as a criminal. Come on. Come on, is cruel. That's cruel, unusual punishment. That's what this man served us. This man was serving, and he is not, at this moment, he's not well. And this is how you treat him? This is sick.
Well, Audrey, and here in my opinion, is of all the truly horrible things that are happening, not just with this young man, with Broderick, but with the PTSD and the VA, here's the worst part. The young man calls the VA begging for help. The counselor that he talks to doesn't get a hold of another counselor or someone in the VA and say, look, we need to get out to this guy. We need to get him in. We need to fetch him and bring him in and get him some help. No, he turns him over to the FBI or to the and to the police. I mean, there is something incredibly wrong with that picture. I mean, how can the counselor not be trained to understand that this man has just spilled his guts to him?
That's it.
And he's begging for help, and he's not going to get it. The only help he's going to get is a ride to jail for 131 days.
There it is. And, again, another epic fail of the VA. It's enough to just make you ill that this is – it just continues. The VA is failing all over the place, and there's no excuse for it, honestly. Sadly, we're at the end of the segment, but a very important question here, Wayne. Where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work and purchase your book, The Natanz Directive?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. At waynesimmons.us. That's waynesimmons.us, and they can look for me on Fox. And I'm sure that they're going to enjoy the Natanz Directive. I'm absolutely positive. It is still timely. And thanks to Ahmadinejad and the mullahs and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, the Natanz Directive stays current. And we're very happy with that. We would hope that one day it's not relevant anymore. It's just a good read. But unfortunately, it is real time and real life today. So.
It is, and it's excellent. And, of course, I'm going to have that information in all my social networks in my after show if you don't have to be near a keyboard or have a pen handy. Thank you so much, Wayne, again, for sharing your brilliant assessments with us. And we look forward to your return to the show. Until then, may God bless you and your work. Bye for now.
Thank you so much, Audrey. Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break right here, but don't go anywhere. Up next, former Navy SEAL and author Carl Higbee will be with us, so stay right there.
Hi, this is Jeff Carlisi from the band 38 Special. The mainstream media has failed the American people once again. Internet radio networks like Red State Talk Radio will not fail you. Tune in 24 hours a day, studios A and B. Great conservative programming around the clock. Red State Talk Radio, the dominant force in Internet conservative talk radio.
What happens in Great Britain eventually happens in the United States. And today, in our home, our land of freedom of speech, we are being completely controlled by Marxist propaganda and through Islamization. Our country has between 4 and 6 million Muslims currently, and that population is doubling every decade. With Christianity on the decline as well, it shows a really bleak future for our country. But the main issue here is not just that Islam is causing so many problems, but it's that the politicians and the police won't do anything about it. Recently it was uncovered that 1,400 young girls in Rotherham have been raped and abused by Muslim gangs over 10 years, and the police were too scared to say anything about it. We would have been called racist, they said. It's now come out that hundreds more, thousands more, have been raped across the country, and still nothing is being done about it. Soldiers are being beheaded on our streets. Muslims are campaigning against democracy. Everything is frankly going to hell. And Britain is in dire need of help. This is why I'm with the party Liberty GB. I'm Jack Buckby, the press officer, and we are standing three candidates in the general election, which is just 2 or 3 weeks away. We need your help to get going. We need your help to have a real effective campaign and for a long-term campaign up until 2020. By then, we think we can really make progress and really influence the main parties, including UKIP, that refuse to talk about these things. So if you'd like to help us, and we really hope you will, please go to libertygb.org.uk. You can donate, you can even become a member, regardless of which country you live in. Please help, please support us, and if we can stop this in England, if we can stop this in Great Britain, we can stop this happening from the United States of America as well. Thank you.
Jeff Carlisi from the band 38 Special. Let us never forget that police lives matter.
Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
Not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Howdy. I am Lieutenant Colonel Retired Alan West, President and CEO of the National Center for Policy Analysis and former member of the United States Congress. And you are listening to Audrey Russo, my dear friend, on Real Talk Radio. Listen up, or else I'll drop you for push-ups. Thank you.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Now, tyrannical ideologies are joining forces to shred, or at least they're attempting to shred, our nation's fabric. A foundation based upon Judeo-Christian principles, a system far better than any other on planet Earth. Oh, how un-PC of me. Are these entities and their minions winning the war against freedom and democracy? Now we're going to discuss that and more with my next guest. For my new listeners, Carl Higbee is a former Navy SEAL who is a decorated special operations expert and has been seen dozens of combat missions. He's a veteran who has not only protected our country in some of the most dangerous regions of the world, but he knows the capabilities of the enemies of freedom. He's an author and a popular pundit on the issues that matter most to freedom. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Carl Higbee.
Thank you, Audrey.
Welcome. Hey, great to have you back, Carl.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. We're going to jump into this here. Now, some of the listeners may have heard Bill O'Reilly making, I guess it was his talking points on America's race problem, and one of the few times I actually agreed with many of the points. I'd like to go through just a few of them and get your assessment on them. He said the culture we now have leads to criminal profiling because young black men are so often involved in crime, which is sadly true, but of course profiling is how they've solved crimes for decades. I don't know if that's a newsflash for him, but young black men commit, he said, homicides at a rate that is 10 times, this is shocking, the rate of whites and Hispanics combined. And he mentions the disintegration of the African-American family. And, of course, I see a great deal of this is really, I believe, a fatherless problem. Some stats for you. 73% of all black babies are born out of wedlock. In 1950, 72% of all black men and 81% of all black women were married. Now, that's in 1950. Before 1960, the number of teenage pregnancies had been decreasing. Both poverty and dependency were declining, and black income was rising in both absolute and relative terms to white income. In 1965, 76.4% of black children were born to married women. Hello. Today,
yep,
in many urban areas, the black illegitimacy rate is well
over 80%. Now, the African-American community, with or without the civil rights establishment, must be, they have to acknowledge at this point and demand that the family is and will forever be the originator and primary transmitter of values and character traits that create adults that seize opportunities and really become productive citizens. Toxic role models like, Al Sharpton, that guide children into a culture of destructive behaviors, as we're seeing on display in the country now, must be challenged and removed from the public pedestal. Do you agree with that, Carl, or is that too extreme?
No, I absolutely agree 100% with that. I think, and the statistics are staggeringly, true to support the his conclusion on that. I think that if you look at the family structure has definitively over a long period of time always been a root of stability and morality. If you have two parents who can take the time to care for their child and show their child love and affection, that child will in turn learn how to share that. If you don't have parents that give love and affection, you get a criminalistic upbringing, and you fall into gangs because you need some structure in your life, and the structure in these ghettos is gang activity, crime. You find that rap pop culture with like the Jay-Z's and the P. Diddy's and things like that, which is not acceptable in a professional society.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's stunning, the statistics from the 1950s to now, where the black-on-black crime, of course, which is not discussed, is incredible. More blacks are killed by blacks than any other culture here. So this is
right, but you don't hear the race baiters screaming that. All you hear about is the needle in the haystack when a black juvenile delinquent or a black criminal is killed by a white cop. It's all you hear about.
Right, a white cop doing his job. You know, they always seem to leave that, gee, it's a white cop that just killed, a black teen, an innocent black teen. And this is the narrative that, of course, the left and the media,
right,
puts on display. Now, Carl, what do you think some, of course, non-politically correct things that we as a society need to begin to do? I mean, because this is quite an uphill battle, but what do you think some of the things that as a society we can do to resolve this?
I think profiling is a legitimate way to combat crime. I mean, look, if you see a white guy in a Volkswagen hatchback Jetta in the ghetto with a popped collar, he's there to buy drugs or he's lost. You see a black guy in a Lexus with a gold chain and a fur coat in a ghetto, he's there to sell drugs. I mean, that's the 99.9 times out of 100, that is going to be the case. So why not go with the statistically correct thing?
Yeah, exactly. Also, we have solved quite a bit of crime with criminal profiling. You know, it has nothing to do with racial.
Yeah.
It has to do with criminal. You know, if it happens
exactly
to be within, yeah, if it happens to be within a culture, well, that's the way it is. I think the culture itself is to blame for that, not those who are trying to solve the crimes.
You look at the TSA as well.
Yeah.
The TSA, I mean, look, how many 90-year-old women in wheelchairs have blown up a plane recently? Zero. So,
yeah, right.
You know, why are they bringing them in for full-body screening just because their number came up? Guess what? The guy with the laundry on his head in front of me, he's the one. First off, the reason he's wearing his rag on his head is because he wants to be identified in association with those type of people. If he didn't want to be associated, he wouldn't wear that on his head to go through an airport. But the fact that he wants to do that is one step closer. I mean, you look at the Israelis. They've been profiling for years in their flight security. And how many incidents have they had? Zero.
Zero. Exactly. That's the safest airline system you can be on. This is incredible how they flip it. And I think our greatest problem is the people on our side start going with their narrative. That's the problem we've had in the GOP. They listen to the left and they go with their narrative. The funny thing is, that's not why we put them in there, is it?
Right, exactly. And then the few, like Ted Cruz, that are sitting there trying to hold their own, say, hey, this is what you elected me for. Those are the people that are being screamed at for being radicals.
Yeah, they're demonized.
When it's actually rational.
Yeah, right, exactly. They're demonized immediately. And that's, of course, because they're, again, allowing the left to take the narrative. We need to take the narrative back. Now, I got to say, God bless Texas. Their Senate has passed an anti-Sharia law, which I'm fairly sure that Governor Abbott will sign. They joined seven other states, including, just in case the listeners don't know, North Carolina, Kansas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and Tennessee. Now, Carl, why are these anti-Sharia laws necessary?
Well, look, these people are – look at Dearborn, Michigan. We've talked about this before. They've completely taken over a region in Michigan where they're saying, oh, you know, we're going to govern by Sharia law. Now, this is becoming increasingly prevalent here because, well, we don't want to offend them, so we have to give them their way, even if it contradicts our local law. Now, I love the sign on this article where it says a no Sharia law zone, and it says, welcome to Texas, set your watches forward 1,400 years. The issue is that's exactly it. It's like Sharia law is a barbaric way of governing. I mean, they're chopping people's hands off. They can beat women. But yet, why is it even a consideration that we would allow this in America? The fact that we're sitting here debating whether or not we have to pass a law saying no Sharia law is ridiculous. It just doesn't jive with local law.
Exactly. Now, you mentioned something there about Sharia law, because it is completely and utterly barbaric. But I have about 3 minutes, this clip, but you've heard it, but the listeners, I'm sure, haven't. And this is courtesy of WorldNet Daily. It's a Somali community, you know, who are here because of Obama, and he labeled them, he gave them refugee status, even though they aren't, and planted them in the midst of, well, mostly the Bible Belt, but in here it's in Minnesota. So I'm just going to play that, and then I want to get your take on what's being said. It's pretty incredible what's being said in this clip. And here we go.
This is the Cedar Riverside neighborhood of Minneapolis. It's known for the University of Minnesota, phenomenal ethnic food, and the export of American fighters to the terrorist groups ISIS and Al-Shabaab. In fact, it's reported that dozens of young Muslims from this community have gone to fight for these organizations. So we hit the street to find out what is going on.
Is it easy to be Muslim in America? Or is it hard?
It's
easy to be Muslim. Yeah. Nobody gives you problems?
No, it's not a problem. This is a free country. That's the beauty of it. So we love America. I mean, you know, it's a great country. Freedom of speech, freedom of choice of your religion.
Right.
So we don't have any issues.
Do you feel more comfortable living under American law, or do you feel more comfortable living under Sharia law?
Sharia law.
I'm a Muslim. I prefer Sharia law.
Sharia law, yes.
You prefer Sharia law over American law?
Of course, yeah. Of course, yeah.
Do you find most of your friends feel the same way?
Yeah, of course. If you're Muslim, yeah.
How do you feel when this whole controversy with the Prophet Muhammad and people depicting the Prophet in cartoons, how does the whole thing make you feel?
That really pisses me off, you know what I mean? Because they know it's a button to push.
That makes me angry. It's just that everyone gets, like, the big freedom, and then they don't see that the freedom that they're getting is causing a problem. It's casting hatred for other people.
Would it be better if we made it illegal in America to make fun of the Prophet Muhammad?
Definitely, yeah.
Do you think we should make a law that makes it illegal to...
That would be better, yeah. That would be better.
Yeah.
To stop, you know, aggression.
I was so upset and I was so mad. They insulted our religion, they insulted our prophet, and we couldn't take it.
And they shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Oh my God. Big time, yes.
Do you understand the motivation behind the people then who strike out violently against people who depict the Prophet Muhammad?
Yeah, I understand totally where you're coming from, yeah.
In a way, they kind of deserved it.
No, every action has a consequence.
Is it right to kill somebody who insults Muhammad?
Yeah, because she is just, she hates the religion, I understand. But she shouldn't beat up the Prophet, you know?
Do you understand why people would want to attack her?
Yeah.
If you had a choice, would you rather live here, or would you rather live in the Muslim country?
I'd rather live in a Muslim country with my people.
Would you prefer to live in America or prefer to live in Somalia?
For me, I think it's Somalia.
You prefer to live in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
Would you rather live in America or live in Somalia?
I would rather live in Somalia.
I'm not Americanized. I just speak fluent, and I'm, you know what I mean? I'm articulate, and I can articulate what I'm trying to say, you know what I mean? That's about it. But other than that, I mean, as far as my culture and my preferences and everything, it's still Somalia, you know what I mean?
Even though here you have all the freedom and stuff like that?
And even though I have all the freedom.
You think life might be better in Somalia than here?
Because now you have the freedom of it, of practicing your religion
right.
while working and doing your other things.
Anyway,
go back.
Oh my God. You know what? I guarantee you, especially that one that said toward the end, a guy that said, "No, I'm not American. You know, I'd rather be over there. You know, I just happen to be articulate." He's also deceived himself, and he says that he'd rather be over there. Well, hey, I'm sure he's on public assistance. Why don't we take that money and give him a ticket back? Am I being an extremist?
No, not at all. I mean, look, if you don't want to be here, leave. I mean, nobody's kids are not. This is not, you know, North Korea. This is, you can leave if you want. And the thing is, and I've said this before, is you look at any country that where Muslims are a minority, they scream for minority rights. You look at any country where Muslims are a majority, there's no such thing as a minority right. So these people will say, "Oh, I love America. I love free speech. I love this, but I want Sharia law." Sharia law. Cancels any type of constitutional freedoms that we have here in America.
Yeah. I don't think that they have any concept of what freedom and democracy is. None whatsoever.
No.
You agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they have been brought up on a system that is tyrannical. Here, look at the attitude toward, drawing the cartoons, which, by the way, were not like Charlie Hebdo. Charlie Hebdo was what some would consider very offensive in their stuff. Okay, fine. But did you notice something that the left, the press, the media, had no problem with that? They focused on those that attack Charlie Hebdo. But Pamela has a contest, and all of the drawings were not like Charlie Hebdo. They weren't like potty humor, okay?
Right.
And yet, who was the demon there? It was Pamela, right?
Right.
Not the guys that try to shoot the place up. How
right.
twisted is that?
I mean, it's so messed up. It's incredible. And these people are saying, you know, in one sentence that they love America for the freedoms. The other sentence is that they want to make a law that says you can't make fun of Prophet Muhammad. Be like, look, I don't really like your religion. And people always say, well, you're Islamophobic. I was like, no, I'm not afraid of them. I just don't like them. I think that the religion as a whole is a detriment to good, good health and well-being for the world. So, I mean, Islam, it's just, convert them or kill them. And, can't have a rational conversation with someone who believes that.
Exactly. That's it in a nutshell, because that's what they were told. That's what they're told in their holy books, is that we must submit. They have to. I mean, as a matter of fact, migration, when they come, what they're doing when they come here. See, they came here, or they're coming here uninvited. Right? I didn't invite them. Did you invite them? I didn't invite them.
No, I definitely did not invite them.
Right. So they come here uninvited, but they don't want to assimilate. They don't want to be Americans. You heard that guy. He really speaks for many. They don't want to be Americans because they are told to come here, convert us, enslave us, or kill us. It's very simple.
Right.
I'm boiling it down. That's basically what they do. And this is right in Minnesota. And those were young people that they were interviewing. In the middle of the day, where are they? How come they're not at a job? Is that because you and I are paying for them to walk around and say they're not American, they
exactly.
don't like our system? I mean,
probably.
I'm sorry. Get the freak out, because that's how I feel at this point. I am.
Yeah.
I got
patience for this.
No, it's this is insanity. Okay. Real quick, we have just a couple more minutes. Now we have Qatar, or Gutter, or whatever they want to call themselves, who are funding the Islamic State, by the way. They've extended the so-called travel ban for the Taliban 5. Now, Carl, how
right.
trustworthy are these people, and how can we really verify, or even how can we verify this, or even that they have not, that the Taliban 5 have not left that country already? Is there any way that we can verify that?
Well, no, and the other thing, I was in Qatar in 2010, Qatar, whatever they want to call it. And the thing is these we give them aid. We give them substantial aid, and now they're turning around and giving aid to terrorism. And it's like, what's
we
going to open
aid?
Our eyes? And,
I'm sorry to
say, we have military bases there.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. Wow.
Yeah, we give them. I don't know what this year's figures are for financial aid, but we have military bases there, and we give them at least physical aid. You know, we give them materials and things like that for out in the town. Our military is not even allowed to leave the bases though because it's considered too hostile, and we're considering these guys, you know, to be somewhat allies of ours. Are you kidding me? I mean, first off, the whole trade was BS in the beginning. I mean, five terrorists for one deserter? I mean, I would have just let Bergdahl rot. I wouldn't have traded anybody for him. And you got Susan Rice going on every major news network saying,
right.
Oh, yeah, he served honorably.
He's a hero.
No knowledge of it. Yeah, exactly. He's a real hero.
Yeah, right. They already, you know, the military already knew that. I mean, they had done an investigation, and now, of course, that new pretend, in my opinion, investigation, I think that the military already knew he was a deserter. And so, what is this, an oops? Oh, we just traded five, not terrorists, and they're leaders, aren't they? Five terrorist leaders, aren't they?
Yeah. We're going to go back to taking charge of stuff.
And to me, I don't know how it is. See, to my real problem here with this at this point is the fact that we have no way of verifying that they're still in the country there, and even if they were, that they're going to honor this. Why would they? You know, I don't think that Qatar is our friend, and their system is completely the antithesis of ours. We're kuffar. We're the infidels. We're the unbelievers. Why would those five terrorists are their brothers? So, are we like really stupid here or what, Carl? Come on.
Yeah, it just sooner or later we're gonna have to learn. So I mean I just don't understand. So the problem with this is that our politicians are so wrapped up in their next re-election campaign that they don't pay any attention to what's really going on out there. That's the issue.
So in other words, our politicians, the majority of them, are really not serving their constituents. They're really serving themselves, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the issue here is we need to see that, you know, it looks good to give a foreign country aid or something like that, but what are we getting out of it? I mean, come on, give me a break here.
Yeah, we absolutely are not getting, not only that, we're in the whole, you know, we're so far worse off because of this trade, and I don't, maybe you're aware of it, I'm just not aware that, you know, the Congress has done anything about the fact that he made this trade, and so they were pushing for an extended ban. What does that mean? I mean, and they have no way of verifying it. So is that
how about we
doing...
just send a Tomahawk missile into the little bungalow that they're staying in?
For
no,
that,
that's
really. I'm laughing because I'm
done.
Definitely
if I had
for
to get
that.
Bergdahl back, I would have said, hey, look, all right, we got Bergdahl. Great, we put you up in this little bungalow. Oh, man, there's a Hellfire missile.
Yeah, exactly. At least they should have done this.
Don't,
some kind
don't
of,
mess with America.
Amen. We should have put some tracking devices on them. You know, something.
Yeah.
Something.
Normal people look at this and they bang their head against the wall.
Yeah, right. And that's probably why it hurts so bad my head right now. Carl, where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work? You have a website, yes?
I do, carlhigbee.com. But you can also find me on at Carl Higbee on Twitter and go to my Facebook page as well. We have I stay pretty updated on my Twitter and Facebook, but you can get the book on Amazon or go to carlhigbee.com to get it there.
Excellent. And, of course, I'll always have that information in all my social networks, my after show. Carl, thanks so much for, again, sharing your assessments on these issues and making some sense out of this insanity. We look forward to your return to the show. And until then, may God bless you and your work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back. Israel's a small country, but when you're in charge of the emergency medical response for its 7.8 million people, it's a big job. Nowhere in Israel is Magen David Adom's work more critical than in Yehudan Shomron, where Israeli homes are often more than a half hour from the nearest hospital. That's why we have emergency medical stations in 16 locations throughout Yesha. MDA is there 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, with trained paramedics, with state-of-the-art equipment, ready to save lives in cities like Ariel, Beitar Elite, and Ma'ale Adumim. MDA is there in towns and settlements like Givat Zev, Efrat, Kiryat Arba, Karne Shomron, and Alfe Menashe. MDA is there in Bet Ariyeh, Ofra, Talmon, and Tikua, Shaked, and Sheveh Shomron, and in regional councils like Megillot and Bikat HaYarden. At Magen David Adom, this is the only green line that matters to us, because when you're living a long way from the nearest hospital, how quickly MDA can get there can make all the difference in the world. And above all, the one thing we value most is life.
Hi, I'm Matt Barber. Your nation is under attack from forces desperate to destroy America's moral foundation. Don't be defeated by the leftist onslaught. Become empowered and fight back. BarbWire.com is a motley mix of breaking news, intelligent cultural analysis, political pontification, and cutting-edge opinion, all fueled by the word of life. If you're comfortable under deception, prepare to be made uncomfortable. We're cutting free the totalitarian left's barbed wire. Join the fight now to reclaim America at BarbWire.com. That's BarbWire.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Simmons, author of The Natanz Directive, and you're listening to the great Audrey Russo on Real Talk.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. And, well, we're about to bring the boom, literally and figuratively, to fuel you with rhetorical ammo in order to preserve your Second Amendment rights. Yes, that's right. You've guessed it. It's time for another episode of... Smoking Gun with Johnny Kakalaki. Welcome back, Johnny. How are you?
Music to my ears.
kind of like bacon crackling, right?
That's it. It's always good to get a standing ovation when you come back to the show.
Right? Oh, you can
I love
okay.
It.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, hey. But seriously, folks.
Okay,
oh, goodness.
what intellectual ammo, because it's intellectual right now, to protect our right to bear arms do you have for us?
Shoot.
Pardon the pun.
Shoot. I like it. Shoot.
Shoot, shoot.
Well, you know, I actually have some good news for you, which most times I'm usually reporting bad news, which I've got plenty of that. Yeah, in fact, I just, before I even get into the good news, I just heard that there's this news out of Boston that a fella, let's see, his name is Usama Rahim, apparently went after Boston police officers with a knife and was plotting with another person to behead Boston police officers with the supposedly inspired by ISIS, calling on all their followers in the U.S. to attack law enforcement officials. So you hear stuff like that, and it's like, man, you think, when is this stuff, you know, going to stop? But I will say, with the violence around the world that has increased, and here in the U.S. with these lone wolves, it's causing a change in firearm policies, and we're seeing. Now, here's the good news: a pro-gun shift here in the United States.
Really?
So that's the good news. I mean, this is, it's been in the works for a while, and I want to kind of unpack a little bit of stuff with you in concerns with this, because it's kind of shifted. It's shifted from the other side to this side. So that's good. You know, as I always say, you know, what's the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun?
A good guy with a gun.
You know, and the bad guys, you know, they got guns, knives, you name it. But the life or death question is, how long does it take for the good guy with the gun to arrive? That's the question. And I think, especially here in the U.S., more and more people are recognizing, and this is, I wouldn't even say the U.S., I'd say even in around the world, more people are recognizing that the victim has the best chance of survival when they can be the first responder, the victim themselves, you know? I really believe, Audrey, that fewer people believe this stuff from, do you remember the spokesperson for former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Shannon Watts? She said that successful armed self-defense never happens.
What?
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Oh,
my goodness. I don't know what Shannon Watts was thinking, but I wanted to take a look at just a couple of events that supposedly never happen when a good guy with a gun stops a rampage. And I kind of wanted to go back a little bit. So many of these things have happened recently that it's almost like you'll forget some of these things. And as I was looking through some of this information, I said, man, I've totally forgotten about some of these things because it's been so much lately. Let me take you to Moore, Oklahoma. 30-year-old Alton Nolan, an Islamic convert calling himself Yakim Yisrael, with a Facebook site with pictures of Osama bin Laden, the 9/11 attacks, a beheading. This guy had been sent to prison in 2011 for assaulting a police officer and then released in March of 2013. Well, several months ago, if you recall, in late September 2014, he was suspended from his job at Vaughn Foods in Moore, Oklahoma, because of a confrontation with a female employee. So later that day, if you remember, he came back armed with an 8-inch knife that he used for chopping fruits and vegetables. At the entrance of the plant, he decapitated 54-year-old grandmother Colleen Hufford, then went into the building and stabbed and tried to decapitate 43-year-old woman Tracy Johnson. Well, that's when our good guy with the gun shows up. Mark Vaughn, the company's chief operating officer, who just also happened to be a reserve deputy with the Oklahoma County Sheriff's Office, happened to have his AR-15 rifle in his vehicle, which, of course, runs contrary to the advice of the Bradys. Well, after he got the rifle, three shots stopped the attack. Well, the guy survived, and he's on trial right now for murder and attempted murder. And the time from the beginning of the 911 call, which was made by an employee right after the attack began, to when he fired the first defensive gunshot was about 3 minutes. Three minutes. That guy decapitated a grandma and tried to decapitate another lady. 3 minutes.
Wow. 3 minutes.
But here's the thing. Oklahoma's laws foster a culture of safety. Businesses in Oklahoma can allow defensive arms in the workplace. Hey-o.
Oh, wow.
Right? Employees there have the right to keep their guns in cars in a corporate parking lot.
The human
if you're
right
a responsible
to defend
adult,
themselves, huh? The
yes.
human right to defend themselves, amazing.
if you're a responsible adult with safety training and a background check, you can obtain a permit to carry a handgun there. That culture saves lives, and that's the kind of culture that we need everywhere. Now, let me just contrast that. let me jump over to Australia. So for the past two decades in Australia, you know, they've been passing these tighter gun laws that, I'll tell you, it's actually created a safe zone for armed predators. And some of them are taking advantage of it. We'll come on up a little bit from September. It hit the end of the year, December. Man Haroon Monis, whose birth name was Mohammed Hassan Montegi, walked into the Lent Chocolate Cafe in Sydney. All right, remember that one? Sure. 17 people hostage he took. Now get this. Another Orthodox Islamic Muslim, he was armed with a shotgun, which supposedly doesn't exist in Australia anymore. Hey-o.
Really?
So all semi-automatic long guns were banned in 1996, and registration lists were used to enforce the mass confiscation of about one-sixth of Australian firearms.
Wow.
What does that remind you of?
Sure.
Registration lists enforcing mass confiscation.
Wow.
So anyway, he enters Australia from Iran in 1996 seeking political asylum, which was granted in 2001. He proclaims himself a sheikh and gets a lot of media attention. So he lives on welfare, writes venomous letters to parents of Australian soldiers who had died fighting in Afghanistan. While on welfare. He was convicted of using postal service to menace, harass, or cause offense, which the Australia's High Court upheld this conviction 3 days before he attacked the cafe. Now get this. At the time of the attack, he was also facing pending charges as an accessory before the fact in the murder of his ex-wife and dozens of counts for sexual assault. This is crazy, Audrey.
Man.
Now, once he took over, unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
Once he took over the cafe, he made the hostages unfurl his ISIS-style banner in the window. Police officers responded as quick as possible, but he had already taken control of the situation inside the cafe, which led to a siege that lasted more than 16 hours. Five hostages escaped, and he said that if anyone else tried to flee, he would shoot them. Well, about 2 in the morning, he began to fall asleep. 12 hostages rushed the door. 6 made it out before he woke up and started firing. The cafe manager tried to get the gun away from him, and he killed him. And then a few minutes later, law enforcement burst in, and a firefight ensued. Katrina Dawson, who was a mother of 3, she was killed trying to protect her pregnant friend. And then the police officers were able to end his life. Well, now here's the thing. In the days after that, Australian Senator David Leyonham, I don't even know if I'm saying that right, but anyway, he pointed out that Australia's complete repression of armed self-defense actually made this guy's hostage-taking possible.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Their extremely restrictive gun laws allow a limited selection of firearms for sports, but they forbid all defensive gun ownership. Now, as this senator pointed out, all of the hostages were prohibited by law. Now, this is by law. Not only, you know, can you have a gun for defense, you can't have a knife, you can't have a stick, pepper spray, personal taser, mace. You cannot have anything like that for self-defense.
Wow.
The gun ban lobbies there don't just hate firearms. They hate the very idea of self-defense.
Yeah.
Now here's the thing. What happened there, Audrey, would probably been most likely to have happened in Texas or Florida, Vermont, Alaska. You know? And that's what this guy said. This senator said that. He said what happened there wouldn't have happened there. The nutcase wouldn't have known that someone in there was armed or not. And here's the thing. Bad guys don't like to be shot back at.
No.
You know? They don't. In the U.S., almost... Right. Funny thing, right? In the U.S., almost all the locations where mass homicides take place are pretend gun-free zones. You know, these are artificially dangerous places where law-abiding citizens are forbidden to carry, so would-be mass murderers know they can kill with impunity until the good guys with the guns arrive. I've got so many stories here of these things happening. Here I'll give you another one. How about Israel? Let's talk about Israel. 7 a.m. in late November, two dozen people praying at a synagogue in Jerusalem, Israel. Cousins Uday and Hassan Abu Jamal attacked with a handgun and axes. They murdered four rabbis, and seven more people were wounded, two critically. Police arrived 11 minutes after the attack began and killed the two attackers. Two police officers were wounded in the shootout, and one of the officers later died. After the attack, the public security minister, Yitzhak Aronovich, promised, "In the coming hours, I will ease restrictions on carrying weapons." And he followed through, making gun carry permits more readily available to Israeli citizens. Now, here's the thing. That was 11 minutes they were able to do that. They murdered four rabbis, hurt seven more, and killed a police officer. This is crazy. These reforms are long, long, long overdue. After that attack, the city's former police chief, this is in Jerusalem, said, "Every citizen who has a gun should carry it." He also noted the enormous amount of illegal handguns held by criminals. So citizens should be able to get a weapon. Those who have one must carry it everywhere. I mean, I'm telling you, it amazes me to think. So you had the Paris disaster with Charlie Hebdo. Russia. Now get this. You want to hear something crazy? Russia. Okay. They have a serious crime problem. Their homicide rate is nearly three times what we have here in the U.S., and most of the homicides go unsolved. Do you know only 46% of Russians feel safe walking alone at night? So Russia now has a gun rights organization called Right to Bear Arms.
Wow.
Who knew? This is led by a woman, Maria Butina, a young woman who grew up in the mountains of Siberia and now lives in Moscow. Her group, for the past several years, has been pressuring Putin to allow defensive carry of arms.
Wow.
Now, we all know Vladimir Putin, and he has long resisted the calls for reforming the laws. But get this. Late last year, he gave in Aha! And one of the longest standing handgun bans in the world is repealed. Carry permits will be available for handguns and for long guns so that Russians can protect their lives, health, and prosperity. Now, let me tell you, the fact that even a dictatorship with a facade of democracy is moving toward respecting the human right of armed self-defense, that right there is one indication of the direction global public opinion and related policy is moving.
Hmm.
Isn't that wild?
It really is. You know, this is a human right of self-defense. And our founders, you know, being the prescient men that they were, they knew what was going to happen because it's happened before. And the fact that every time something occurs because of mental illness, you know, or well, I mean, most of the time it's mental illness, and then to then restrict all the people as if we are all capable of this, of the act of, let's say, we'll look at Sandy Hook, okay? We are not all capable of, you know, I mean, we may be capable, but we're not probable. It's not probable that we will do something like that because we all are not infected with mental illness.
Right.
So what they do is they take those opportunities because they don't care. They just want to disarm us. So what do? That is every single gun law, in my opinion, is infringement of our Second Amendment rights. That is our right, and we are just, at this point, you know, I feel like I'm suffocating in New York. This is what it's like here. Where you can't move left or right without feeling like, you know, that you're going to get arrested for something. Wanting to exercise your rights. I mean, in New York, you got to go like at least an hour away in order to be able to go to a range.
Just to go to a range.
Incredible. Just to go to a freaking range. This is how angry I am about this. I mean, you can't go to Jersey anymore. You can't even buy any ammo in Jersey because this is what they do. They say you have to have an ammo card. Of course, you can't get an ammo card unless you are a Jersey resident. So they, you know, this is what where they're going. America.
Well, I'll tell you this. The trends. I'll tell you this. The trends are shifting here in the U.S. I hear what you're saying, and I'll tell you that in 1959, the Gallup poll showed 3 out of 5 Americans supported handgun prohibition, and today that's only 1 in 4. I'll say from 90, yes,
back in 59, that's the way they thought? That's
3 out of 5. Isn't
that's crazy.
And I know the Pew Research Center, since 93, they've been asking people, you know, whether it's more important to protect the right to own guns or to control guns. And from 93 to 2007, the pro-control side held the lead, sometimes by as high as 37%. Well, since 2008, it was pretty much a tie, and now the pro-gun right side holds the largest lead ever at 52% to 46%. So, you know, people are seeing this, you know. And in 2000, Gallup introduced the question, do you think having a gun in the house makes it a safer place to be or a more dangerous place to be? In 2000, 35% said safer, 51% said more dangerous. Well, now that has switched. 63% of Americans say safer and only 30% say more dangerous. So that doesn't mean the battle's over to protect our rights. You know, the anti-gunners, you know, they're always pushing for the, you know, restricted firearm ownership, as long as you got the big dollar folks like Bloomberg footing the bill. But that doesn't mean that the long-term cultural trends, you know, that does mean that the long-term cultural trends are positive, because people at home and abroad are increasingly recognizing, hey, guns in the right hands make everyone safe. You know?
Sure, exactly. It's encouraging to see that. I think what we're seeing is that people are starting to realize that, and of course this is a truth, that the police are not ubiquitous. You know, they're human beings, and they cannot be everywhere at the same time. That is exactly why our founders gave us a Second Amendment. We need to protect ourselves and our families. We can't do that if the government and entities in the government itself are constant, constantly robbing us and doing it. Of course, it's the frog in the boiling water. You know, it's all being done incrementally, and this is what they do. They'll say, well, you know, and they always appeal to feelings, not your brain.
Oh,
that's something you got to know, is that the left will not appeal to your brain, because God gave you your brain. He wants you to engage it. And when you apply critical thinking, then you realize how wrong the left is. But the left will say, see, look at this, what this person did to this family. And it bypasses your brain, okay? It goes right to your emotions. That is extremely dangerous to implement and actually pass laws that are based upon emotion and not on facts. So this is the situation, sadly, that we find ourselves in. It's just heartbreaking to me. But
disarming us doesn't make anyone safer.
No, of course not. How could it?
You know, that's foolish. That is foolish.
Yeah.
You know, and here's the thing. Lives depend on basically whether the first good guy with the gun is there in 11 minutes, 5 minutes, or whether he's already on the scene exercising his or her right to carry. Because, you know, as I've always told you, I can't carry a cop all the time.
Yeah, well, that's it. Well, thanks so much, Johnny, for all your excellent work.
I'm out of time. I always run out of time.
Well, there'll be another time, so we're going to look forward to the next one. And I'm going to give you some writing off music. Here we go. Woo!
Hi, this is Jeff Carlisi from the band 38 Special. The mainstream media has failed the American people once again. Internet radio networks like Red State Talk Radio will not fail you. Tune in 24 hours a day, studios A and B. Great conservative programming around the clock. Red State Talk Radio, the dominant force in internet conservative talk radio.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight for Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo. Until our next show, follow Audrey on Facebook and Twitter. She's also on LinkedIn and Google+, Pinterest, Instagram, Tumblr, Locker Dome, but she spends most of her time on Facebook and Twitter. You can also check out her website at AudreyRusso.com. Feel free to click on the donate button on the left. Any amount is appreciated to help keep the website running. She does follow back, and she'll keep you up to speed on her upcoming guests on the show and her articles on ClashDaily.com and BarbWire.com. Well, we'll catch you next time as Audrey exits stage right.